Osho, Vigyan Bhairav Tantra, Volume 2, The Book of the Secrets, A New Commentary, Discourse Number 37, given in Bombay, India.
Existence as such is one. The human problem arises because of human self-consciousness. Consciousness gives everyone a feeling that you are separate. This feeling that you are separate from existence creates all the problems. Basically, it is false. And whatsoever is based on a falsity will create anguish, will create problems, will create confusion. And whatsoever you do which is based on this false separateness will go wrong. So from the very beginning, the problem of human anguish has to be tackled. How it arises? Consciousness gives you a feeling that you are the center of your being. And consciousness makes you aware that others are others. You are different from them. This difference is just because of being conscious. While you are asleep, there is no difference. You are merged with the universe again. Hence, so much bliss comes out of sleep. In the morning you feel refreshed, rejuvenated, again alive, fresh. What is happening in deep sleep? You are losing your ego. You are losing yourself. You are falling in a unity with the universe. That falling back into the unity makes you fresh, alive, and in the morning you feel blissful. All the anguish disappears. All conflict, struggle disappears. All fear, all death disappears. Because death is possible only if you are separate. If you are not separate, then death is impossible. Who is going to die if you are not separate? Who can suffer if you are not separate? So the whole tantra, yoga, and all other methods of meditation are just to make you aware that separateness is false, inseparateness is real. And if you can become aware of that, you will be totally different. Because the center would have disappeared from you. It will take its right place in the universe. You will be just a wave on this vast ocean. You will not be separate, so you will not be afraid. You will not feel insecure. you will not feel the anguish of approaching death, annihilation. All that disappears with the ego. Hindus have always believed that samadhi is conscious sleep. In sleep it happens automatically that you are no more. The existence is you are no more. But you are deeply unconscious. You don't know what is happening. If the same phenomena can happen consciously, you become enlightened. Buddha moves to the same source. To the same source you move every night in deep sleep, in dreamless sleep. But Buddha moves to that source consciously, alert, aware. He knows where he is moving. He knows what is happening. And when he comes back from that deep source, he comes totally different. The old has disappeared. A new being, a new energy has arisen out of it. Of this new being, the center is the universe. And with this transfer of the center, all your worries, all your anguish, all your help disappears, simply disappears. It is not solved. It is simply not there. It cannot exist there without the ego. So how to be consciously deep asleep? How to move into sleep consciously? How to remain alert while you are losing the ego? Ego is a byproduct. Byproduct of your whole upbringing. Byproduct of the natural course of life. It has to be there. There is no way. No being can evolve without getting involved with the ego. But a point comes where ego can be dropped and should be dropped, and the being should transcend it. The ego is just like the cell of the egg. It is needed. It protects. Just like the cell of a seed, it is needed, it protects. But the protection can become dangerous also if it protects too much. If it goes on protecting and doesn't allow the seed to sprout, then it becomes a hindrance. It must dissolve into the earth so that the inner life evolves out of it. It must die. The seed must die. Every man is born as a seed. The ego is the outer covering. It protects the child. If a child is born without the ego, without the feeling that I exist, he cannot survive. He will not be able to protect. He will not be able to struggle. He will not be able in any way to exist. He needs a strong center. Even if it is false, it is needed. But a moment comes when this help becomes a hindrance. It protects you from outside, but it becomes so strong that it will not allow you, the inner being, to spread, to go beyond it, to sprout. ego is needed, and then ego transcendence is needed. If someone dies with the ego, he has died as a seed. He has died without being really attaining the destiny that was possible, without attaining existence consciously. These techniques are how to destroy this seed. The first technique: feel the consciousness of each person as your own consciousness. So leaving aside concern for self, become each being. Feel the consciousness of each person as your own consciousness. In reality, it is so, but it is not felt so. You feel your consciousness as yours. Really, other's consciousness you never feel. At the most, you infer that others are also conscious. You infer because you think you are conscious, so beings like you must be conscious. This is the logical inference. You don't feel them as conscious. It is just like you have a headache. You feel your headache. You have a consciousness of it. Someone else has a headache. You infer. You cannot feel the other's headache. You simply infer that whatever he is saying must be true. And he must be having something like you. But you cannot feel it. The feeling can come only if you become conscious about others' consciousness. Otherwise, it is a logical inference. You believe, you trust that others are saying something honestly, and whatsoever they are saying is worth believing because you also have similar type of experiences. There is a logicalist school who say that nothing can be known about the other. It is impossible. At the most, inference. Nothing certain can be known about others. How can you know that others have pain like you? Others have anxieties like you. Really, others are there. We cannot penetrate them. We can only just touch their surface. Their inner being remains unknown. We remain closed in ourselves. The world around us is not a felt world, just inferred, logically, rationally. The mind says it is there. The heart is not touched by it. That's why we behave with others as if they are things, not persons. Our relationship with persons also is as if it is with things. A husband behaves with his wife as a thing. He possesses her. The wife possesses the husband, just like a thing. If we behave with the other as a person, then we will not try to purchase. Because only things can be purchased. A person means freedom. The person cannot be possessed. Or if you try to possess it, you will kill it. It will become a thing. Our relationship with others is really not a I-thou relationship. Deep, it is just I-it relationship. The other is just a thing to be manipulated, to be used, exploited. That's why love becomes more and more impossible. Because love means taking the other as a person, as a conscious being, as a freedom, as valuable as you are. When you behave with things, you are the center. And things are just to be used. The relationship is utilitarian. Things have no values in themselves. The value is that you can use them. They exist for you. A person exists for himself. You can be related to your house. The house exists for you. It is an utility. The car exists for you. But the wife doesn't exist for you. The husband doesn't exist for you. The husband exists for himself. The wife exists for herself. That's what being a person means. And if you allow the person to be a person and don't reduce him to be a thing, you will by and by start feeling him. Otherwise you cannot feel. Your relationship will remain conceptual, intellectual, mind to mind, head to head, but not heart to heart. This technique says, feel the consciousness of each person as your own consciousness. This will be difficult because first you have to feel the person, as a conscious being. Even that is difficult. Jesus says, love your neighbor as you love yourself. The same. But the other first must become a person for you. He must exist in his own right, not to be exploited, manipulated, utilized, not as a means, but an end in himself. First, the other must become a person. The other must become a Tao. As valuable as you are, only then this technique can be applied. Feel the consciousness of each person as your own consciousness. First feel that the other is conscious, and then this can happen. You can feel that the other has the same consciousness that you have. Really, the other disappears. Only a consciousness flows between you and him. You become two poles of one consciousness flowing, of one current. In deep love it happens that the two persons are not two. Something in between two has come into being, and these two have just become two poles. Something is flowing between the two. When this flow is there, you feel blissful. If love gives bliss, it gives only because of this. the two persons, even for a single moment, lose their egos. The otherness is lost and oneness comes into being. Even for a single moment, if it happens, it is ecstatic, it is blissful. You have entered paradise, even for a single moment. And this moment can be transforming. This technique says that this you can do with every person. In love, you may do and you may like to do it with some person. But in meditation, you have to do with every person. Whosoever comes near you, simply dissolve into him and feel that you are not two, but one life is flowing. This is just changing the gestalt. Once you know, once you have done it, it is very easy. In the beginning it seems impossible, because we are so stuck in our own egos. It is difficult to become a fellow. It is difficult to lose. So it will be good you try it in the beginning with something where you are not much scared and afraid. Sitting near a tree, just feel the tree and you have become one, and there is a flow between you, a communication, a dialogue, a melting. You will be less afraid of a tree, and it will be easier. Sitting near a river flowing, just feel the flow, that you and river have become one. Lying under the sky, just feel that you and the sky have become one. In the beginning, it will be just imagination. But by and by, you will feel that you are touching reality through imagination. And then try it with persons. It is difficult in the beginning to try with persons. The fear is the same that you have been doing with persons. You have been reducing them to be things. You are afraid. If you allow someone to be so intimate, he will reduce you into a thing. That is the fear. So no one allows much intimation. A gap is always to be guarded. Too closeness is dangerous, because the other can convert you into a thing. He can try to possess you. That is the fear. You are trying to convert others into things, and others are trying to convert you. And no one wants to be a thing. No one wants to become a means. No one wants to be used. That is the most degrading phenomena. You being reduced to be just a means to something, not valuable in yourself. But everyone is trying. Because of this, there is a deep fear. So it will be difficult to start this technique with persons. It started with a river, with a hill, with his stars, with his sky, with trees. Once you come to know the feeling that when you become one with the tree, what happens? When you become one with the river, what happens? How blissful you become. Without losing anything, you gain the whole existence. Then you can try it with persons. And if it is so blissful with a tree, with a river, you cannot imagine how much more blissful it will be with a person. a person is a higher phenomena, a higher evolved being. Through a person you can reach higher peaks of experience. Even with a rock, you can become ecstatic. So with a person, you can feel just divine ecstasy happening to you. But it starts with something you are not much afraid. Or if you have some person you love, your friend, your beloved, your lover, of whom you are not afraid, with whom you can be really intimate and close without any fear, with whom you can lose yourself without getting scared deep down that he may turn you into a thing. If you have someone like that, then try this technique. Lose yourself consciously into him. And when you lose consciously into someone, that someone will lose into you. When you are open, when you flow into the other starts flowing into you. And there is a deep meeting, a communion. Two energies melt into each other. In that state, there is no ego, no individual. Simple consciousness. And this is possible if with one individual, this is possible with the whole universe. What saints have called ecstasy samadhi is just a deep love phenomena between a person and the whole universe. Feel the consciousness of each person as your own consciousness. So leaving aside concern for self, become each being. We are always concerned with our own self. Even while we are in love, we are concerned with our own self. That's why love becomes a misery. It can become heaven, but it becomes a hell. Because even lovers are concerned with their own self. The other is loved because he gives you happiness, joy. The other is loved because you feel good with him. But the other is still not loved as something valuable in himself or herself. The value comes through your enjoyment. You are gratified. You are satisfied in some way. That's why the other has become significant. But this is also using the other. Concern for the self means exploitation of the other. And religious consciousness can come into existence only when a concern for the self is lost. Because then you become non-exploitative. With existence, your relationship becomes not of exploitation, but of fear, sharing, fear bliss. You are not using, you are not being used. It becomes a fear celebration of being. But concern for the self has to be thrown away. This is very deep-rooted, this concern for the self. It is so deep-rooted that you are not even aware of it. In one of the Upanishads it is said, that the husband loves his wife not for the wife, but for himself. The mother loves the child not for the child, but herself. The concern for the self is so deep-rooted that whatsoever you do for yourself. This means that you are always gratifying the ego, feeding the ego, feeding a false center which has become a barrier between you and the universe. Lose the concern for the self. Even sometimes, even for a few moments, you can lose concern for the self and can become concerned with the other, can become concerned with the other self. You will be entering in a different reality, a different dimension. Hence so much emphasis on service, love, compassion. Because compassion, love, or service means concern for the other self, not concern with yourself. But look, human mind is so cunning that even human mind has converted service, compassion, and love in concerns for the self. A Christian missionary serving, and his service is sincere. Really, no one else serves so deeply and intensely as a Christian missionary can do. No Hindu can do this, that. No Mohammedan can do that. Because Jesus has emphasized service so much. A Christian missionary serving poor people, ill people, diseased people. But deep down he is concerned with himself, not with them. This service is just a method to reach heaven. He is not concerned with them. He is not really concerned with them at all. He is concerned with his own self. And through service, he can achieve a greater self. So he is doing service. But he has missed the basic point. Because service means the concern for the other. The other is the center, and you have become the periphery. Try it sometimes when you make someone the center. His happiness becomes your happiness. His misery becomes your misery. Whatsoever happens, happens to him and flows to you. But he is the center. Once, even once, if you can feel this, that the other was the center, you had become just a periphery to him. You have entered a different type of existence, a different dimension of experience. Because in that moment you will feel such deep bliss, unknown before, unexperienced before. Just by making other the concern, you will lose all misery. In that moment, there will be no hell for you. You have entered paradise. Why it happens? It happens because ego is the root of all misery. If you can forget it, if you can dissolve it, all misery dissolves with it. Feel the consciousness of each person as your own consciousness, so So leaving aside concern for self, become each being. Become the tree, become the river, become the wife, become the husband, become the child or the mother, become the friend. It can be practiced every moment of life. But in the beginning it will be difficult. So do it at least 1 hour every day. In that hour, whatsoever passes around you, become that. You will think how it can happen. But there is no other way to know how it can happen. You have to practice it. Sit with the tree and feel that you have become the tree. And when the wind comes and the whole tree starts shaking and trembling, feel that shaking and trembling in you. And when the sun rises and the whole tree becomes alive, feel that aliveness in you. And a shower of rain comes, and the whole tree is satisfied and content. A long thirst, a long awaiting has disappeared, and the tree is completely satisfied and content. Feel satisfied and content with the tree. And then you will become aware of subtle moods, nuances of a tree. You have seen that tree for so many years, but you don't know its moods. Sometimes it is happy, sometimes it is unhappy, sometimes it is sad, dead, worried, frustrated, sometimes very blissful, ecstatic. There are moods. The tree is alive and it feels. But if you become one with it, then you will feel it. Then you will feel whether the tree is young or old, whether the tree is dissatisfied with its life or satisfied, whether the tree is in love with existence are not anti, against, furious, angry, whether the tree is violent, or there is a deep compassion in it. Every moment as you are changing, the tree is also changing. If you can feel a deep affinity, what they call empathy, empathy means that you become so sympathetic that really you become one. The moods of the tree become your moods. And then if this goes deeper and deeper and deeper, you can talk. You can have communication with the tree. Once you know its moods, you start understanding its language. And the tree will share its mind with you. It will share its agonies and ecstasies. And this can happen with the whole universe. For 1 hour at least every day, try to be in empathy with something. In the beginning you will look foolish to yourself. You will think, what stupidity I am doing. You will look around and you will feel if someone looks and someone sees and someone comes to know, they will think you have gone crazy. But only in the beginning. Once you enter this world of empathy, the whole world will look crazy to you. they are missing so much unnecessarily. Life gives in such abundance and they are missing it. They are missing because they are closed. They don't allow life to enter in them. And life can enter you only if you enter in life through many, many ways, through many paths, through multi-dimensions. At least for 1 hour every day, and that was the meaning in the beginning of every religion. The meaning of prayer was this: to be in affinity with the universe. To be in a deep communication with the universe. In prayer you are talking to God. God means the totality. Sometimes you may be angry with the God, sometimes thankful. But one thing is certain, that you are in communication. The God is not just a mental concept. It has become a deep, intimate relationship. That's what prayer means. But our prayers have gone rotten because we don't know how to communicate with beings. And if you cannot communicate with beings, you cannot communicate with the being, with a B capital. It is impossible. If you cannot communicate with a tree, how can you communicate with the total existence? And if you feel foolish talking to a tree, you will feel more foolish talking to God. One hour every day, live for a prayerful state of mind. And don't make your prayer a verbal affair. Make it a feeling thing. Rather than saying with the head, feel it. Go and touch the tree, hug the tree, kiss the tree, close your eyes and be with the tree as if you are with your beloved. Feel it. And soon you will come to a deep understanding what it means to put the self aside. What it means to become the other. Feel the consciousness of each person as your own consciousness. So leaving aside concern for self, become each being. Second technique. This consciousness exists as each being and nothing else exists. Scientists used to say in the past that only matter exists and nothing else exists. Great systems of philosophy arose based on this concept that only matter exists. But even those who believed that matter exists, they had to concede that something like consciousness is there. Then what it is? So they said that consciousness is just an epiphenomena, just a byproduct of matter. It is nothing but matter in disguise. Something very subtle but still material. But this half century has seen a very great miracle happen. Scientists tried and tried to find out what matter is, and the more they tried, the more they came to realize that there is nothing like matter. The matter was analyzed and found that it has disappeared. Nietzsche said just 100 years before that God is dead. And with God dead, there can be no consciousness, because God means the totality of consciousness. But just within 100 years' time, matter is dead. And now matter is dead not because religious people believe so. Now matter is dead because scientists have come to a definite conclusion that matter is just appearance. It appears because we cannot see very deeply. If we can see deeply, it disappears, and then energy is left. This phenomenon of energy, non-material energy, force, has been known by mystics since long. In the Vedas, in the Bible, in Quran, in Upanishads, all over the world, mystics have penetrated into existence, and they have concluded always that matter is just an appearance. Deep down, there is no matter, but energy. With this, now science agrees. But the mystics have said one thing more, and science has yet to agree with it, and science will have to agree with it. Those mystics have come to another conclusion also. They say when you penetrate deep in energy, energy also disappears and only consciousness remains. So these are three layers. Matter, the first layer, the surface. If you penetrate the surface, then the second layer becomes apparent. You can perceive the second layer, which is energy. And if you penetrate energy, then the third layer becomes illumined, and the third layer is consciousness. In the beginning, science said they are just dreaming, because we see only matter and nothing else. Then science tried to penetrate, and mystics' second layer was affirmed, that matter is just apparent. Deep down, it is nothing but energy. Now, mystics have another claim also. They say penetrate more into energy, and energy also disappears, and there remains only consciousness. That consciousness is God. That is the deepest, most core. If you penetrate in your body, these three layers are there. Just on the surface is your body. Body looks material. But deep in body there are currents of life, prana, vital energy. Without that vital energy, your body will just be a corpse. It is alive with something flowing in it. That flowing something is energy. But deep, still deep, you are aware. You can witness your body, your vital energy, you can witness both. That witnessing is your consciousness. Every existence has three layers. The deepest is the witness in consciousness. Just in the middle is vital energy. And just on the surface is matter, material body. This technique says this consciousness exists as each being and nothing else exists. What you are, who you are, if you close your eyes and try to find out who you are, ultimately you are bound to come to a conclusion that you are consciousness. Because everything else may belong to you, but you are not that. The body belongs to you. But you can be aware of the body. And that which is aware of the body becomes separate. The body becomes the object of knowledge, and you become the subject. You can know your body. Not only you can know, you can manipulate your body. You can activate your body, or you can make inactive. You are separate. You can do something with your body. Not only that, you are not body, you are not your mind. Because you can become aware of your mind also. Thoughts move. You can see them. You can do something with your thoughts also. You can make them disappear completely. You can become thoughtless. Or you can concentrate your consciousness on one thought. And you may not allow it to move from there. You can focus yourself on it and it will have to remain there. Or you can allow a river-like flow of thought. You can do something with your thoughts. Even you can dissolve them completely and there is no thought. But you are. You will know that there are no thoughts. A vacuum has come into being. But you will be there witnessing that vacuum. Only one thing you cannot separate yourself with is your witnessing energy. That means you are that. You cannot separate yourself from it. You can separate with everything. You can know you are not your body, you are not your mind, but you cannot know that you are not your witnessing. Because whatsoever you do, you will be the witness. You cannot separate yourself from witnessing. That witnessing is consciousness. And unless you come to a point from where separation becomes impossible, you have not come to yourself. So there are methods in which the seeker goes on eliminating. He goes on eliminating first the body, then the mind, and then comes to the point where nothing can be eliminated. In Upanishads they say neti neti. This is a deep method. This is not. That is not. So the seeker goes on knowing this is not. This is not me. This is not I. Goes on and on. Ultimately he comes to a point where he cannot say this is not I. Just a witnessing self remains. Pure consciousness remains. This pure consciousness exist as each being. Whatsoever is in existence is just a phenomena of this consciousness. Just a wave a crystallization of this consciousness, and nothing else exists. But this has to be felt. Analysis can be helpful. Intellectual understanding can be helpful. But this has to be felt, that nothing else exists. Only consciousness exists. And behave as if only consciousness exists. I have heard about Lynch, one Zen master. He was sitting one day in his hut. Someone came to meet him. The man who came was angry. He may have been fighting with his wife or with his wife or something, but he was angry. He pushed the door in anger. He threw his shoes in anger. And then he came very respectfully, bowed down to Lynchy. Lynchy said, "First go and ask forgiveness from the door and ask forgiveness from the shoes." That man must have looked at Lynchy very strangely. There were other people also sitting. They started laughing. Lynchy said, "Stop and ask that man, if you don't go, then leave. I have nothing to do with you." That man said, "It will look crazy asking forgiveness from the shoes and from the door." Lynchy said, "It was not crazy when you expressed anger. No, it will be crazy. But everything has consciousness. So you go, and unless the door forgives you, I'm not going to allow you in." That man felt awkward, but he had to go. That man later on became a monk himself, became enlightened. When he became enlightened, then he related the whole anecdote. And he said, "When I stood before the door asking forgiveness, I felt awkward, foolish. But then I said, if Lynchy says, there must be something in it. I trusted Lynchy. So I said, let it be foolish, but if he says, there must be something in it." In the beginning, whatever I was saying to the door was just superficial, artificial. But by and by, I started becoming warm. And Lynchy was waiting, and he had said that, "I will watch. If the door forgives you, only then you will come in. Otherwise you go on being there and try and persuade the door and the shoes, unless they forgive." And this man said, "I became by and by warm. I forgot about that many people were looking. I forgot about Lynchy." And then the concern became sincere and real. And I started to feel that the door is changing. And the shoes are changing their mood. And the moment I realized that the door has changed and the shoes have changed, and they are feeling happy, immediately Lynchy said, "Now you can come. You have been forgiven." This incident became a transforming phenomenon in his life, in that man's life. Because for the first time he became aware that everything is really a crystallization of consciousness. If you cannot see it, it is because you are blind. If you cannot hear it, it is because you are deaf. There is nothing the matter with the things around you. Everything is condensed consciousness. The problem is with you, because you are not open, not sensitive. This technique says this consciousness exists as each being and nothing else exists. Live with this notion. Be sensitive to this. And wherever you move, move with this mind and this heart, that everything is consciousness and nothing else exists. Sooner or later, the world changes its face. Sooner or later, objects disappear and persons start appearing everywhere. Sooner or later, suddenly, the whole world is illumined, and you know that you were living in a world of dead things just because of your insensitivity. Otherwise, everything is alive. Not only alive, everything is conscious. Because everything deep down is nothing but consciousness. But you can leave it as a theory. You can believe in it as a theory, then nothing will happen. You will have to make it a way of life, a style of life, behaving as if everything is conscious. In the beginning it will be an as if, and you will feel foolish. But if you can persist in your foolishness, and if you can dare to be foolish, soon the world starts revealing its mysteries. And science is not the only methodology to enter the mysteries of existence. Really, that is the crudest methodology. It's lowest. A mystic can enter into existence in a single moment. Science will take millions of years to penetrate that much. Upanishads say the world is illusory, the matter is illusory. After 5,000 years, science could say that matter is illusory. Upanishads say that the energy is conscious. Science will still take 5,000 years more. Mysticism is a jump. Science is a very slow movement. The intellect cannot jump. It has to argue. Argue every fact. Prove, disprove. Experiment. But the heart can jump immediately. Remember, for the intellect the process is necessary, then comes the conclusion. Process first, then the conclusion. Logical. For the heart, conclusion first, then comes the process. It is just the reverse. That's why mystics cannot prove anything. They have the conclusion, but they don't have the process. You may not be aware, you may not have noticed it, that mystics simply talk about conclusions. If you read Upanishads, then you will find only conclusions. When for the first time they were translated into Western languages, Western philosophers couldn't see the point because there was no argument. Upanishads say there is Brahma. Without any argument, how you reach to this conclusion? What is the proof? On what premise you declare there is Brahma? They don't ask anything. They simply come to the conclusion. The heart reaches to the conclusion immediately. And then, when the conclusion is reached, you can create the process. That is the meaning of theology. Mystics reach the conclusion and theologians create the process. So Jesus reaches the conclusion and then theologians, St. Augustine, Thomas Aquinas, they will go on creating the process. That is secondary. The conclusion has been reached. Now you have to find out proofs. The proof is in the life of the mystic. He cannot argue about it. He himself is the proof if you can see. If you cannot see, then there is no proof. Then religion is absurd. Don't make these techniques theories. They are not. They are jumps into experience, jumps into conclusion. Third technique, this consciousness is the spirit of guidance of each one. Be this one. This consciousness is the spirit of guidance of each one. Be this one. First thing, you have the guide within you. But you don't use it. And you have not used it for so long, for so many lives, that you may not even be aware that a guide exists within you. I was reading Castaneda's book. One beautiful experiment his master Don Juan gives him to do. The experiment is one of the oldest. In a dark night, on a very hilly track, dangerous, without any light, Castaneda's master says that you simply believe in the inner guide and you start running. It is dangerous. It is a hilly track, unknown. Trees, bushes, abysses. He can fall anywhere. Even in the daylight, he had to be alert walking there. And in this night, everything is dark. He cannot see anything. And his master says, don't walk, run. He cannot believe. It is simply suicidal. He becomes scared. But the master is running. The master goes in this direction, running, just like a wild animal. Comes running back. And this man cannot understand how he is doing this. Not only in this darkness he is running, he every time comes directly running to him, as if he can see. Then by and by he gathers courage. If this old man can do this, why not he? He tries. And by and by he feels the inner light coming in. Then he starts running. He only is whenever he starts thinking. The moment he starts thinking, the error happens. If he doesn't think, everything is okay, as if some inner light working. Your reason has misguided you. And the greatest misguidance has been this, that you cannot believe in the inner guide. First, you have to convince your reason. Even if your inner guide says, go ahead, you have to convince your reason. And then you miss opportunities. Because there are moments, you can use them or you can miss them. Intellect takes time. And while you are pondering, contemplating, thinking, you miss the moment. Life is not waiting for you. One has to live immediately. One has to be really a warrior, as they say in Zen. Because when you are fighting in the field with your sword, you cannot think. You have to move without thinking. Zen masters have used sword as a technique for meditation. And they say in Japan that if two Zen masters, two meditative persons, are fighting with their swords, there can be no conclusion. There can be no one defeated and no one is going to win. Because they both are not thinking. The swords are just not in their hands, they are in the hands of their inner guide, non-thinking inner guide. And before the other attacks, the guide knows and defends. You cannot think about it because there is no time. The other is aiming at your heart. In a flip of moment, the sword will penetrate the heart. There is no point, there is no time to think about it, what to do. Unless, simultaneously, when the thought occurs to him that penetrate the heart, the thought occurs to you that defend. Simultaneously, with no gap, only then you can defend, otherwise you will be no more. So they teach swordmanship as a meditation. And they say, be moment to moment with the inner guide. Don't think. Allow the inner being to do whatsoever happens to it. Don't interfere with the mind. This is very difficult. Because we are so much trained with the mind, our schools, colleges, universities, the whole culture, the whole pattern of civilization teaches your head. We have lost contact with the inner guide. And everyone is born with that inner guide. But it is not allowed to work, to function. It is almost paralyzed, but it can be revived. This sutra is for that inner guide. This consciousness is the spirit of guidance of each one. Be this one. Don't think with the head. Really don't think at all. Just move. Try it in some situations. It will be difficult. Because the old habit will start thinking. You will have to be alert. Not to think. But feel inwardly what is coming to the mind. You may be confused many times because you will not be able to know whether it is coming from the inner guide or from the surface of the mind. But soon you will know the feeling, the difference. When something comes from the inner, it comes from your navel upwards. You can feel the flow, the warmth coming from the navel upwards. Whenever your mind thinks, it is just on the surface in the head, and then it goes down. If your mind decides something, then you have to force it down. If your inner guide decides, then something bubbles up in you. It comes from the deep core of your being, towards the mind. The mind receives it, but it is not of the mind. It comes from beyond. And that's why mind is scared about it. It is not reliable to the reason. Because it comes from the behind without any reason with it, without any proofs. It simply bubbles up. Try it in certain situations. For example, you have lost your path in a forest. Try it. Don't think. Just close the eyes. Sit down, be meditative. And don't think, because it is futile. How you can think? You don't know. But thinking has become such a habit that you go on thinking even in moments when nothing can come out of it. Thinking can think only about something which is already known. You are lost in a forest. You don't have any map. There is nobody you can ask what you are thinking. But still you will think. That thinking will be just a worry, not a thinking. And the more you get worried, the less the inner light can be contacted. Be unworried. Sit down under a tree and just allow thoughts to drop and subside. And just wait, don't think, don't create the problem, just wait. And when you feel a moment of non-thinking has come, then stand up and start moving. Wheresoever your body moves, allow it to move. You just be a witness, don't interfere. And the last path can be found very easily. But the only condition is don't interfere with the mind. This has been happening many times unknowingly also. Great scientists say that whenever a great discovery has been made, it was never made by the mind. It was always made by the inner light. Madame Curie was trying and trying to solve a mathematical problem. She did her best. That was possible, all that was possible. She got fed up for days together, weeks together. She was working and nothing was coming out. She was feeling just mad. No path was leading to the solution. Then one night, just exhausted, she fell down and slept. Just in the night, in a dream, the conclusion bubbled up. And she was so much concerned with the conclusion that the dream was broken. She became awake. Immediately she wrote down the conclusion, because there was no process in dream, just conclusion. She wrote down on a pad and then again slept. In the morning she was puzzled. The conclusion was right, but she didn't know how it has been achieved. There was no process, no method. Then she tried for the process. But no, it was an easier affair because the conclusion was in the hand, and it is easy to go back from the conclusion. She won the Nobel Prize because of this dream. And she was always wondering how it happened. When your mind gets exhausted and it cannot do any more, it simply retires. In that moment of retirement, the inner guide can give you hints, clues, keys. The man who won Nobel Prize for the inner structure of human self fight in a dream. He saw the whole structure of human self, inner self, in a dream. And then in the morning he just made a picture of it. He himself couldn't believe that it can be so. Then he had to work for years, and after years he could conclude that the dream was true. With Madame Curie it happened that when she came to know this inner process of the inner guide, she tried it. Once there was a problem and she wanted to solve, so she thought, why worry about and why try? Just go to sleep. She slept well, but there was no solution. So she was puzzled. Many times she tried. Immediately there was any problem, she will go to sleep, but there was no solution. First, the intellect has to be tired completely. Only then it can bubble up. The head has to go completely exhausted. Otherwise it goes on functioning even in the dream. So, now scientists say that all the great discoveries are intuitive, not intellectual. This is what is meant by the inner guide. This consciousness is the spirit of guidance of each one. Be this one. Lose the head. And drop into this inner guide. It is there. Old scriptures say, the master or the guru, the outer guru, can be helpful only to find out the inner guru. That's all. Once the outer guru has helped you to find the inner guru, the function of the outer guru is no more. You cannot reach to the truth through a master. You can reach only to the inner master through a master. And then the inner master will lead you to the truth. The outer master is just a representative, a substitute. He has his inner guide. And he can feel your inner guide also. Because they both exist in the same wave. They both exist in the same tuning, in the same dimension. If I have found my inner guide, I can look into you and can feel your inner guide. And if I am really a guide to you, all my guidance will be to lead you to our inner guide. Once you are in contact with the inner guide, I am no more needed. Now you can move alone. So all that a guru can do is to push you down from your head to your nerves, from your reasoning to your intuitive force, from your argumentative mind to your trusting guide. And this is not that this is only with human beings, this is so with animals, with birds, with trees, with everything. The inner guide exists. And many new phenomena have been discovered which are mysteries. There are few physicists. The mother dies immediately the moment she puts the egg. And then the father helps the egg to be fertilized. And then the father dies. The egg remains alone, without mother and without father. It matures. A new fish is born. This fish doesn't know anything about father, mother, parents. She doesn't know from where they came. And this particular fish lives in a particular part of the sea. This new child will move to that part from where the mother and father had come to lay the eggs on this bank. This will move to the source. And this has been happening. And again, when she wants to lay an egg, she will come to this bank, lay the egg and die. So no communication between parents and their children, but their children somehow know where they have to go, where they have to move, and they never miss. And you cannot misguide them. It has been tried to misguide, but you cannot misguide them. They will reach to the source. Some inner guide working. In Soviet Russia, they were experimenting with cats, with rats, and with many small animals. A cat, a mother cat, was just put on the bank of a river. And her children were taken deep down into the sea. There was no possibility of any communication from the deep sea. What is happening to her children? And every type of scientific instrument was attached to the cat to know what is going on within her mind and her heart. And then her children, one children was killed deep in the sea. Immediately, the mother became aware. Her blood rate changed. She became puzzled and worried. Heartbeat increased. Immediately the child was killed there. Immediately. And the scientific instrument said that she is feeling severe pain. Then everything was okay. Then another child was killed again. Then the third child was killed and again. And every time exactly, without any time gap. What is happening? Now, Soviet scientists say the mother has an inner guide, an inner feeling center. And that is joined with her children, wherever they are. And she immediately feels a telepathic relationship. Human mother will not feel so much. This is puzzling. It should be quite the otherwise. Human mother should feel more. She is more evolved. But she will not feel because the head has taken everything into its hands. Inner centers are all lying paralyzed. This consciousness is the spirit of guidance of each one, be this one. Whenever you are puzzled in a situation, you cannot find any path, you cannot find how to go out of it, don't think. Just be in a deep non-thinking and allow the inner guide to guide you. In the beginning you will feel afraid, insecure. But soon, when every time you will come to the right conclusion, every time you will come to the right door, you will gather courage and you will become trusting. If this trust happens, this trust I call faith. This is really religious faith, the trust in the inner guide. Reasoning is part of the ego. It is you believing in yourself. The moment you go deep within you, you have come to the very soul of the universe. Your inner guide is part of the divine guidance. When you follow it, you follow the divine. When you follow yourself, you are complicating things. And you don't know what you are doing. And you may look yourself very wise. You are not. Wisdom comes of the heart. It is not of the intellect. Wisdom comes from the innermost depth of your being. It is not of the head. Cut your head really. Be headless. And follow the being whatsoever. Wheresoever it leads. Even if it leads in danger, go into danger. Because that will be the path for you and your growth. Through that danger, you will grow and become mature. Even if the inner guide leads you to the death, go into it. Because that is going to be the path for you. Follow it. Trust it. And move with it. Enough for today?